RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
How did we go from disparate groups and many protesting against COVID vaccine mandates brought together on Parliament's lawns to people being exposed and in some cases radicalised in violent extremism?
And everything mixes together, right? This is a Telegram group, which also exists on Facebook, that started out of, you know, the COVID conspiracy theory stuff. And here we're sending the idea of satanic stuff, pedophile stuff, Freemasonry, and transgender issues all in one.
It's got a lot on the bingo card in one.
It really does. And that's a really fascinating part of this, is that they all just kind of merge into one. Like, the people who were protesting about vaccines a year and a half ago are now protesting about transgender access to bathrooms. Like, they're not connected, but once you're in this space of conspiracy outrage, everything's connected.
What Dylan's describing is called community bridging, where people connect on one issue, say COVID denial or vaccine hesitancy, where they establish and then grow trust before the conversation shifts and overlaps into other issues.
So I'd like to welcome back to RCR Catherine Ennis-Carter. We've had a couple of chats with Catherine in the time we've been broadcasting since March about mis and disinformation. If you remember, Catherine was at that seminar back in, I think it was February this year, for members of the bureaucracy, the health bureaucracy, the presentation by the Disinformation Project. So Catherine is back with us. Hi, Catherine. Great to have you back. Thanks for coming.
Hi, Paul. Thanks very much for having me back.
Okay, so we just heard a little excerpt there from the new RNZ series, Undercurrent. That was episode one, which came out yesterday, released yesterday. And you heard, I mean, there's a lot in that first episode. It's mainly about how scared politicians are, boo-hoo. But you heard there that, and we've heard it before, and we've talked about it before, that conflating those who were on the grounds of Parliament, who were there defending their rights and their bodily autonomy, that's a no-brainer. Now they are seamlessly dissolving into a whole plethora of other misinformation, disinformation, radical causes. This is a real demonization, bareface, right in front of your eyes, at official government level through the state broadcaster. This is where we're at. You want to make a comment about that?
Well, yes. I want to go back to, there's a lot to talk about in this space, and right at the moment there are three reports which we can look at, which are obviously related. But I just want to go back to the, first of all, the disinformation seminar and that background, because I spoke when we talked before about the tactics that are being used by people who are talking up this whole issue about misinformation and disinformation. And we've talked before about the Disinformation Project and all of that. So what we're looking at now with the things that have come out recently is that it's all within that wider context. And at the seminar, there was an advisor called Michael Daubs, who is connected with the internet wider industry, and he's been acting as a policy advisor for internal affairs. So the proposal for, which is called something to do with online safety, it reflects the things that he was talking about at the seminar. And things that I want to draw attention to is that these people at the seminar, they were prostrate with grief that the proposal for the hate speech legislation had been put aside on Chris Hipkins' so-called policy bonfire. And of course, you know, it's really only been deferred. But they were saying that that was a terrible thing that had happened in New Zealand in the last 24 hours. And so now, coming out of internal affairs, we've got this proposal for online safety, which is basically a censorship mechanism. And then in the same month that is their consultation period for this proposal about greater online censorship, we have this undercurrent so-called documentary, which has appeared on Radio New Zealand, which is their fourth documentary series about since the Parliament protest, which is basically saying all the same things. So it's the same people involved, the same messages. You've got Kate Hannah reeling out all this stuff about the misinformation community. It's the same messages. And now we're, on top of that, we have a release from a something which is laughably called proactive release of a report done by Kantar Public. The report is called Unite Against COVID, the COVID-19 Infodemic. And this report was obviously commissioned immediately after the Parliament protest. I think probably the fact that it was commissioned reflects the fact that I think Jacinda Ardern and her colleagues were actually quite frightened by what happened at the Parliament protest. And obviously in the months that followed, they commissioned this Kantar survey of misinformation and the misinformation community. And the report is dated September the 22nd, so they've held it for almost a year.
Why would they hold it for that long, do you think?
Well, I think it's because it contains a lot of information and statistics that they probably didn't expect or didn't want, or that don't help their cause. And so they've held it. Now they've decided to chuck it out into the general public at the same time as they're calling for a consultation and submissions on this online safety proposals from Internal Affairs. And the thing about that is that the survey that the report outlines was obviously undertaken between March and September, but to get to a piece of research which has been clearly commissioned by the Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet, and to get to the stage where the survey is done, the results are analysed, it's written up, a final report is produced, dated September. So obviously that was action very soon after the Parliament protest, and I think it's obvious why it was.
Yeah. obvious. Timing's everything, right?
Timing is everything. Now, to help talk that up, the mainstream media have had a good go at this over the last year. So first of all, we had the Fire and Fury documentary attempting to defame and malign all those people who were at the Parliament protest and the issues surrounding that. And then we've had the Web of Chaos, which was on TV, which was basically the same content.
There's a theme that there's a whole theme to this.
Yes,
everything is made with the same cookie cutter production values. Music and the way it's written, it's all basically the same.
It's the same thing. And then you had the Corin Dan report, which at least recognised that if the politicians had gone and talked to the protesters, that the eventual violence might not have erupted. And now we've got...
That's wrong, because the eventual violence came from the police.
Well, yes.
So, you know, it was the police commissioners and politicians' choice for it not to get violent. So that's a misdirection in of itself. Anyway, just so.
Yeah, right. And now we've got this undercurrent, which is back to the disinformation project again.
Big time.
So yeah. There you've got Sanjay Hotutawa, Kate Hanna, you know, these same people mouthing the same stuff. And I noticed that they're now building on that report that you and I talked about earlier on, which was released a couple of months ago, talking about the transitions in the misinformation community and this concept of community bridging.
So and contagion.
Yes. well, at the disinformation seminar, they said that misinformation and the misinformation community were a contagion in society. There was this technique about psychological inoculation. In other words, you know, we've got to do more propaganda and brainwashing
and cancelling and public struggle sessions a la Mao regime to get it under control.
Yes, exactly. So, but this undercurrent thing is now building on this message that, you know, this misinformation community, they're morphing into all these other areas like transgender and...
Well, it's interesting. I've listened to the whole, sorry to jump in, but I've listened to the whole episode one of Undercurrent. So, and we heard a bit of it before, but I've listened to the whole thing. And I know the people who made it and produced it and the technical operators who put it together. I know who most of them are because I've worked with them before for years. So unfortunately for them, I know who they are. And I know how normally it is operated. For a start, Susie Ferguson describing Posey Parker as an anti-trans activist is fundamentally journalistically wrong, number one. So if you're a professional journalist, you've already made a big mistake because she's never said that. She's a speak up for women campaigner, supporter, advocate, whatever. The other thing is I've sat in editorial meetings in RNZ News, many of them. And you know what? If we're making something that we've already made before and someone's putting it up as an idea, the first thing that is said is we've already done that. Forget that. But they have gone back to this. So that tells me that they're being told to make this.
Oh,
this is,
I think
this is not a voluntary thing. This is not just coming up with a great creative idea. Susie's probably being paid extra actually to do this as an incentive because she's an intelligent woman from Scotland. And they drink a bit too much there, but and not a New Zealander. And that seems to be a theme of many of these people commenting. But I can't believe someone that professional would lower themselves that much without some sort of incentive or some sort of threat to their career if they didn't. Just saying. And I know because I've been on the inside. I've been in a situation before with them.
Well, Susie Ferguson disappeared from Morning Report a while ago, and I had been wondering what she was doing. But obviously... you know, these people are that there's plenty of rewards obviously available to them by snuffling at the government trough. And, you know, they're producing these pieces. But all of this stuff, you know, you can go through it and you can, it's not hard to take it apart in terms of how inflammatory it is, how lacking in ethics it is, compared to what should be investigative or neutral or objective journalism. It just isn't. It isn't even correct because it's this undercurrent thing has got statements in it like it says that the mandates were ended long ago. Well, the mandates in the health sector are still there. You can't get a job if you're still unvaccinated. So all the unvaccinated the nurses still can't come back to work.
They're all the senior experienced nurses too, by the way.
Yes, and they're all, you know, they're all still required to keep up their boosters and all this stuff. So the mandates haven't ended. And the government left it up to individual organisations as to whether they wanted to keep the mandates in place. So a lot of what they're saying is just not true. And I despise the lack of ethics in, you know, reporting like this and passing off this kind of stuff as journalism. It's just not.
Another thing I noticed with this current undercurrent, I keep on thinking it's called Unhinged, but no, it's Undercurrent.
Yes.
And they keep on talking about far right, extreme right, but they never actually say what their definition of that is. It's never stated. I've listened to the whole thing. Far right is mentioned often in that first episode, but they've never defined what it is.
Well, the thing that is through...
Nothing to anchor it to. So you have no
exactly.
idea of what of any scale or anything that they're talking about.
No. We have got some definitions of misinformation and disinformation in a couple of these documents. But the thing that is that I despise, particularly in terms of academia, is that the thing that's the inherent bias that's running through all of this stuff, whether you look at the Disinformation Project, and as I've said before, I saw their abstract. They took it off their website ages ago, but I saw their original abstract. And it was their whole approach is based on the fact that the official narrative is truth and everything else is misinformation or disinformation. And that line of argument runs through everything. It runs through these other reports that we're going to talk about this morning in a bit more detail. There's the fundamental assumption in all of it that what the government says is true and everything else is false and misinformation and disinformation. And you've got in this, in the undercurrent one, that the Radio New Zealand's new attempt at all this, you know, again, they're talking about racism, fascism, transphobia, Islamophobia, white supremacy. They say it's all falling on fertile ground. It's all mixed up together. And the other thing is, you know, you see the same tactics coming out again. I talked before about the labelling that these, you know, the negative labelling that these people are doing. And using that labelling to it's basically defamation.
What it really saying. Is, yeah.
And, you know, they're targeting certain people by naming them and other people by not naming them but making it clear who they're talking about. It's projection, it's misdirection, and now I would add a fifth thing to their tactics, which is causing confusion. So, you know, they're actually causing division and confusion with all this stuff.
Yeah, which is disinformation, misinformation at its worst, if you're trying to do that to a society. Here's a question for you, which came up yesterday. We interviewed Matt Shelton about the died suddenly cases in New Zealand, not putting names to them, but putting ages and contexts to some of them. Because it's a real thing and, you know, we got to talk about reality. Well, we had some feedback from a listener who said they shared the replay link to their husband on Facebook Messenger so he could listen to that interview. She's now been banned from Facebook Messenger for 3 days for posting that link. Now, here's the question. First of all, how did they know what that link was? How were they brought to know about it? Who told them, and how can they make a decision on something that's an hour 15 long with a snap of a finger?
Well, exactly. And this is one of the reasons why.
So we're being censored. We are being censored.
Oh,
question
we are being
is,
censored
who makes
now.
The call to Facebook? Who makes that call?
Yes. Yes. And clearly we're being censored now. I mean, I know that my LinkedIn profile has been looked at by these people on the Disinformation Project. You know, where anybody who puts their head above
it,
the power.
It's likely to be them fundamentally, though, isn't it? Or GCSB, or one of them. It's got to be a government operation who've got time and the energy to sit across everything we do and then advise back channel or whatever to the social media platform. Not only do not let this link go, but ban anyone for 3 days for just attempting to send it to their frickin' husband.
Yes, I know. Well, that's really shocking. But somehow that person has popped up, you know, in their radar. And this is what's happening. People who've been trying to put stuff on Facebook, you know, the number of times, I mean, anything that you posted that had a mention of COVID-19, immediately onto your Facebook site popped up all these government warnings about, getting the truth about COVID-19 and fact-checking of references and all this stuff. So it's been going on for ages.
Yeah, well, fact-checking is a scam. I tried to send somebody a picture of Hunter Biden on the crack cocaine pipe. It's quite a well-known picture through Messenger, and it wouldn't let me attach it.
Really?
So that's the level we're at the moment. It's a factual picture. I mean, it's a picture of him doing something, and that could not be. It could not be shifted electronically. Anyway, just saying. So, okay, so where do we go now and what we're talking about? We've got this, timing is everything. So the election's close. I'm smelling fear in the politicians. I think some of them are really scared.
Absolutely. Like
really scared. It's coming through. That whole first episode of Undercurrent is all about how scared politicians are. Boo-hoo.
Yes, boo-hoo.
It's the quiet part out loud, really.
Yes. Well, I think that's right. But if I look at, again, going back to Michael Daubs and the information disinformation seminar, these people, that, as I say, they were very upset about the hate speech legislation having been shelved. So now this is their attempt to do something. His whole presentation at the seminar was about regulation of social media and getting greater level of control over social media. And that's what this is about. So they've obviously worked on this, shoved it out in the hope that, they can get it out there before the election. And hopefully, with these other mechanisms that are coincidentally appearing, massage the New Zealand public into, getting back on the subject of fear about misinformation and disinformation.
Yeah, how you can ever think that's a good thing to maintain a cohesive society? I don't know. You'd have to be on another planet, or you're being paid really well. And that's what I was thinking when you said that they would have been disappointed that hate speech legislation hadn't gone through, because that's their wealth affected, essentially.
Oh, yes, yes.
Because there's plenty of money to be made if that thing passes. There's armies of people who sift through and give their incredible opinions on things, which is all billable by probably, what, $135 an hour, I would say.
Yes. Well, of course, what's become clear to me is the extent of money, as I said, that's going into universities to fund all this so-called research. And the Undercurrent piece, draws on some of those people. So Paul Spoonley, who's been, an advocate for government for some time, even in during the key years, he was always on the TV talking up the benefits of immigration and all this kind of thing that the key government was promoting. He's got a new appointment as the director of the National Centre for Research Excellence for Preventing and Countering Violent Extremism.
So he's a genius at that, is he? What's his background? Is he a stats guy? Isn't he a demographer?
Sociologist.
What?
Social science, sociology, yeah. Okay. Social psychology, all that stuff. And, so they're referring to other activists like Tina Nata, who was at the disinformation seminar, Donna Carson, another so-called journalist. So what you see about this is their attempts to validate it by calling up these so-called experts. But of course, what we've seen through this whole thing is that any experts who are saying something different are just cancelled.
Maybe it's time for some independent, in fact, I'm going to look into this, independent investigative journalists to start digging around in the personal lives of these people. Because if they're going to go to these lengths and cause this disruption potentially to society, then it doesn't come without a price. You've got to be squeaky clean. And I'm wondering what we would find in some of these closets if a good deal of digging around was done. I think it's time to do that.
Well, I think it's time to do that, but I think it's also time to stop pussyfooting around with this whole subject about misinformation and disinformation. And personally, I'm going to start talking about government disinformation, because it's clear that most of the misinformation and disinformation is coming from official sources.
Totally. Talk about being gaslit.
You know, we have to stop using their terms and defending ourselves as, you know, part of the misinformation.
Well, they're just blatant liars. They just lie all the time.
Well, I think we have to start, you know, using the proper terms. They're using plenty of teams, and they're introducing, you know, all these reports introduce a lot of so-called pseudo-academic terminology to make people, you know, believe that these people are expert, that they know what they're doing. So in the undercurrent thing, you've got somebody talking about moral injury. She's decided that, you know, people who... into misinformation, who protested against the mandates, for example, you know, they feel that they've sustained some sort of moral injury. That's why they're getting into misinformation. Paul Sponley says he talked about ontological security, sociological term, which he's saying is having a sense of who we are, you know, is important as,
oh, really? As part of our identity. What a genius that guy is. Incredible. Yeah. Einstein, so, watch out.
So he concludes that people who believe in misinformation and disinformation, you know, we're all people, you know, we're poor, misguided people, we're feeling unrecognized.
We only had a sociology degree. If only we had a sociology degree.
Well, I have a sociology degree.
Okay, well, okay, I'll take that back then.
I mean, I don't feel, you know, I'm not some poor, you know, unrecognized, marginalized.
See, this is what they think about us. This is what people have to understand. They think you're a freaking moron.
Yes.
The hubris. And the arrogance and the superiority, none of it earned, is outrageously stunning.
It is outrageous. And the behaviour that they're modelling in doing this is actually getting out there into the public. And it's creating a perception amongst these people who are buying into either the woke narrative or the government official narrative about COVID-19. That they are superior, and you know the arrogance with which they feel they're entitled to shut down other points of view is astounding. And of course, you know, you saw that with the Albert Park schmozzle. You know, these people who turned up and became an angry crowd that actually behaved in a despicable manner. You know, causing violence, creating violence themselves, actually causing some people physical violence, that that's all okay because they're defending the morality of transgender rights. You know, so all of this is becoming so...
It's like Night of the Broken Glass, you know.
Yeah, but...
We're only doing what we think is right, you know, these... You know, it's not doing anything wrong here.
Well, it's extremely manipulative. And I went to a meeting the other night on another subject, and there were a lot of protesters there, and I was there just going along. I want to hear what the person had to say. You know, I'm interested in a lot of people's opinions about various matters. And if you don't, you know, analyse the whole spectrum of what's being said on particular issues, then you're just deliberately wearing blinkers. But as we're driving up to this event, there were a lot of protesters along the side of the road, and they were holding up signs and yelling things. And so one woman was sort of yelling at me as we were driving past in the car. I went down my window to hear what she was saying, and she called me a racist. She said, "Go home, racist. You're a disgusting person," she said. Now, she doesn't know me from Adam, you know, from anybody. She knows nothing about me. And I particularly resent being called a racist, because in my public service life, when I was a manager, I had many of my portfolios involved iwi liaison. I worked actively with various government efforts to do things in terms of Māori development. I've spent 20 years of my life working in developing countries, you know, trying to...
Yeah, how dare they say that to you?
For poor people.
They don't know a damn thing about you.
I'm a disgusting person.
Well, this is brainwashing at work, and it's these people who are doing this. Well, so this is a national security issue, actually, as it turns out, for the stability of the nation. Timing's everything. Election's coming soon. I haven't heard Christopher Luxon. I haven't heard David Seymour. I haven't heard any of those people say, "Hey, this has gone too far. This is all BS. We're going to end this. Don't you worry." There hasn't been a peep, or have I missed something?
No, not a peep.
So why not, do you think?
Well, you know, we've talked before about who's behind a lot of this stuff. And just leading into this, I want to make a point about what is really terrible that happened during the whole, you know, this whole madness of the last 3 years.
Yeah.
And these are historically significant things which, you know, have been just, which have been almost bypassed. But the fact that New Zealand was divided into a segregated society through the mandates, that was such a matter of historical significance. And, you know, the media just let that go right by without drawing attention to the fact that it was actually creating a segregated society.
Jump in here? Could we say that that in of itself is probably one of the most historic disruptions to our society in the history of this nation, if not the most?
Absolutely. It is of such historical significance. And the fact that it hasn't been all over the media talked about, that academics have not been concerned about that, it's just, and I suspect that it's one of these things that maybe 20 or 30 years down the track will be recognised for what it was.
If we last that long.
But, you know, if you think about that interview with Jacinda Ardern, where she talked about that, she was asked the question, "Aren't you creating two classes of people?" And her whole manner was so disturbing, you know.
It was an evil laugh, let's be honest. Yep. It was an evil laugh.
Yep, that's what we're doing, yes. extraordinary. But the other thing I want to draw attention to, which I think is probably even more significant, is that during this whole vaccine campaign from 2020, when they started talking about, you know, from the beginning we were told that the only thing that would fix COVID-19 was a vaccine.
A lie.
And then through the whole 2021 vaccine campaign, and then culminating in the Parliament protest. During that whole thing, the thing that was really significant was that was probably the first time in our society where the government actually gave people, identified a scapegoat, a group of people who could be blamed for what was happening, and gave the general public license to abuse and to, you know, and as I've said before, I think we were about 2 months away from a situation where a majority of the general public would have been quite happy to see anti-vaxxers, to use that term, taken away to detention facilities.
Oh, we weren't that far away from it. I agree.
Yeah. And
in fact, you could have almost started to do it at that point.
And the government did that. They gave people a license to hate people who were refusing the COVID-19 vaccine. Now, if you think that of what that's about, you know, and again, as I've said before, there were two words missing from that whole debate, which was novel technology, you know, and we know that people were inadequately informed about what the so-called vaccine really was, that it wasn't a vaccine, in fact. But I think that those two things are so significant and represent such a decline in any kind of morality of governance or ethics of governance in New Zealand that we really do have to be concerned.
Yeah, okay. So getting back to that that point I raised just before, how come there seems to be no obvious vocal political opposition to any of this? They're just not saying anything. And I find that difficult to understand unless they're scared as well of speaking out. I don't know. But you would think there was hay to be made there, but they're not making it.
No, they're not making it. And this is where, you know, you have to start questioning what's in behind this, what's driving this, because, you know, people say that the idea of the conspiracy theorists that, you know, there are international global elites who are driving this under the radar, who are influencing government and basically telling them what to do. We've talked about the World Economic Forum and so on. People want to discard this. Oh, no, you know, they want to believe that the government's in charge and the government is right and the government's doing the right thing. You know, but if that's not what's happening, then you have to find an alternative explanation for why, you know, this madness is going on and why we have what somebody, Winston Peters, I think, might have been, called, you know, the main parties, the uni party.
Yeah, because it's true.
Because they're all the same thing. I mean, ACT is, you know, they're trying to position themselves as different, but they're basically saying the same things too. So are the Greens. So what's the explanation for that? You know, why? What is an alternative explanation for how all the governments across the world were in lockstep about and who willingly went along with all these things? Why nobody voicing an alternative opinion has been allowed? Why people who have tried to stand up and say and warn about the vaccine, why they've been pilloried and persecuted?
Why can't people listen to Matt Shelton?
Well, exactly. You know, why are these people being banned? You can't find any other reasonable explanation for why there's no objective journalism anymore, why all the people in government are doing the same thing, why, you know, so many of these things, why are we getting this madness about transgender stuff and all this disinformation stuff? You can't find an alternative explanation other than, you know, something or
there's a big
some
force.
People.
There's an intense force somewhere.
There is.
And
there
it's a dark
be.
Force, I would
yes.
say. And
yes.
it's incredibly concentrated, incredibly powerful, projects a lot of fear, I would say. And if we found out, peeled back the layers and found that, it would probably be almost too much to bear just to even look at it. But something's
yeah.
there. Something has to be there.
It has to be. And, you know, I say to people to put themselves you know, in the position that, you know, if you won lotto and you won a lot of money on lotto, you know, at what point would you be thinking, oh, well, you know, I can, people instinctively think about what they can do for their family and their and their nearest and dearest. And then, but the more money they have, they start thinking about, well, what can I do, you know, community issues, Now, if your wealth was in billions and even trillions, which some of these global elites are, do you think you'd just be spending your life collecting art and playing golf?
Stamp collecting.
No. If you had that much money, you'd be able to influence world events.
You can influence a lot of stuff at a huge scale.
And, of course, they are. It's all about, we have to protect New Zealanders. It's all about safety. You know, we have to make people aware about the
need
for safety.
Can I make a very politically incorrect comment? This sounds to me like the fever dream of female anxiety being projected on the entire population. I'm sorry, but that's what it sounds like. safe well-being, protecting.
Yes, I know.
Endless. It's like you're being smothered by your mother.
Well, it's nanny state.
Yeah, nanny. There you go.
But when you look at the functions that this entity is going to have, and this entity is going to have a board. It's going to have a chief executive, and clearly it's going to have staff, and it's basically a government entity they're talking about setting up. So it will develop and approve the codes of practice, and there's a whole lot of weasel words and, you know, assuring, very, very assuring rhetoric about, you know.
Don't worry, mummy's here.
Yeah,
mummy's
looking after you. So this regulator will develop and approve the codes of practice, working with industry to develop those. They have an auditing and monitoring function. So they're monitoring these platforms and their compliance. They have enforcement powers. So they can take down content and they can initiate prosecutions. They can't actually undertake the prosecutions. That's other government agencies would do that, but they can initiate those. So they can, you know, they can start the process for judicial action and prosecutions. They can report to Parliament on the outcomes set, which are supposed to be set by Parliament. They oversee the reporting from industry platforms. They provide user support to platforms to be compliant.
Oh, and support. Then
don't
worry, mummy's gonna help you.
Oh, we'll help you be compliant.
Yeah.
And then these education programs. And they specifically mention contracting these education programs out to organizations like NGOs. So, you know, we can have
these. Wouldn't be the same ones who do the trans education in schools, would it be?
Well, I was going to say we can have these organisations going into schools like the organisations like Inside Out,
yeah.
Are doing now. So then it says they're not looking to provide any extra controls on legal content.
Legal.
So they, you know, and so
that's the stuff that they're not offended by. That's the stuff that doesn't challenge them, right?
Well, yes. But when they talk about illegal content, they make the point that that we already have existing mechanisms and processes to deal with illegal content.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
And so, and then they talk about unsafe content, and that it would be also part of the regulator's duty to look at whether there's reason to declare some of the legal content as illegal. So they are extending the scope. So, you know, so, and they're talking, it's talking about all media. So it's not just social media. They want to bring all media under this one cohesive framework, regulatory framework.
Yeah.
So first of all, it's an extension of government reach, and it is an extension of censorship and control. And they're talking about things like, you know, stronger recommendations and monitoring of systems and algorithms and all of this. So, you know, all of this is more government overreach. And the Department of Internal Affairs has set up a online Zoom sessions where they so-called information or discussion sessions where they've got a talking head from internal affairs presenting all this and, you know, making very, very soothing statements.
Mummy's here. Don't worry. We're going to look after you. You'll be safe. Well-being is everything.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they continue
That person probably has zero life experience, no experience in the media, never, ever been challenged on anything. Just saying.
Oh, well, yes. I mean, he's a bit of a kind of a robotic sort of human
of course.
Person, you know.
Yeah.
You know, but, but you can recognise the tactics. So, first of all, it's all very soothing and assuring. You know, most people won't even notice any difference in what they're doing on social media. Disguising the fact that, you know, this is deliberately setting up another government entity for control. It is government overreach. It is extending, and it is extending into more censorship.
Well, I can tell you the first people they're going to come for is us.
Yeah, and,
question. The platform, not so much because he's controlled opposition. But for us, you watch. Get ready.
Yeah, well, this is it. And so... quite apart from the fact that, you know, that this is basically, a government entity being set up for the purpose of extra censorship, masquerading under the title of independent, masquerading under all these assurances about, safety and looking after us, and of course, in the examples in the report, they've chosen things that, most people would be able to agree are harmful things, you know, on the internet. They talk about sort of overt misogyny, they talk about promotion of harmful stuff about, you know, disordered eating habits, you know, to kids. So they use all these examples, which everybody can say, oh, yes, you know, well, yes, we would be concerned about that, and yes, we should have more regulation of that. So this is a Trojan horse. Actually, it's not even really a Trojan horse. It's an overweight cart horse.
which might just have to be put down.
which they're
attempting. Put it out of its misery at some point.
Yes. Another little, there's all sorts of things in this that are interesting to pick holes in. And one is that in addition to all these other positions, so the board, a CEO, they're going to have a statutory officer within the regulator's office who, they say blatantly, will have a censorship role. And they're separating that out from the monitoring and investigative functions. And they say that this separation within the office enhances the independence of the censorship role by separating it within the organisation. And that this person appointed to that particular office would have deep expertise in applying the law on how to determine if content is illegal.
Now, who has that sort of deep expertise in little old NZ, I wonder? Paul Spoonley?
Well...
one of those types...
But, you know, they're deliberately putting in this that, you know, this extra censorship. But on the one hand, they say they're not doing extra censorship.
But they are, yeah.
They're not monitoring, you know, legal content, but they're going to have this statutory officer who can look at this. And so they are expanding into legal content. And if they think that the public is fooled by, you know, sort of setting up a position that's supposed to have Chinese whisper walls.
Well, that's what they're doing. They're doing a good cop, bad cop kind of thing, aren't they?
Well, but it's within the same office.
But the nice ones don't have to go there. It's that guy in the back room who does all that.
Yes. So anyway, those are the proposals, and I think we do have to be concerned about it. We have to take up.
I don't want to sound pessimistic, Catherine, but we're not going to be able to stop this.
Well, at least we can draw attention.
The fight will really come when they have a go at one of us. That's where the fight will happen, and that's where people will find out who supports who. And, you know, but I got a feeling, just based on the track record so far, these people don't stop. They don't give up.
No, because their patronage and their benefits from the system are tied into this.
Yeah. So the greed.
And of course, as you said before, you know, there's an element of desperation in this. And I think that it's also partly happening because more information is coming out all the time about the adverse effects of the vaccine. More information is coming out about the total ineffectiveness of the so-called vaccine against transmission. More information is coming out, and you've had people on RCR who've been talking about some of the OIA report releases
right.
that have come out, where it's been clearly established what the government knew, that they knew things about the unsafety and ineffectiveness.
They had their own officials warning them.
They did, and they knew about these things at a time when they were telling the New Zealand public something completely different. They knew about it when Jacinda Ardern was telling people that, oh, if somebody who was vaccinated got COVID, it was only a rare breakthrough.
Yeah, and the guy who signed off most of it is now the leader of the country. Let's never forget that.
Of course.
Upper hut, hang your heads in shame.
Yeah, well, can we talk about
the
other report, the Kantar report? Because this has clearly been released, you know, to coincide with this consultation period on the online safety DIA proposal. And you asked before, you know, why would it be held for a year? So there's two answers. There's two points to cover there. One is, I think it's deliberately been released at this point to enable people to talk up the fear of misinformation and disinformation, clearly to hopefully enhance support for this extra censorship on online safety. But I think the reason why it hadn't been released before is because when you go through it, there's some very other interesting statistics. And so let's just have a look at what some of those are.
They're probably dangerous anyway to even mention.
Okay. So this report, they did this survey of 2,000 people. It was done online. They don't specifically state how they selected the respondents. But anyway, they say it was an online survey of 2,000 people. And the results that they want to talk up at the moment are that somewhere around 70 to 80% of people are concerned about COVID-19 misinformation. And the thing that they're particularly seizing on is that of the people who they've identified as believing misinformation, they say 8% think that threats of harm are a legitimate action. And so they're talking that up. Oh, look at this, it's terrible. 8% of these people are saying that violent extremism, you know, harming people is okay, and making physical threats on social media is okay. But some of the other statistics are far more interesting. If you look at this, what's demonstrated in all the results is that there's about 20% of their respondents who are kind of believers in the official narrative, and they don't believe any misinformation. if you can define what misinformation is. But there's also a core, a solid core of about 20 to 25% of their respondents who believe that secret groups or the deep state are controlling what the government does and says.
So 25% or more.
23%.
Oh, 23, okay. Still,
actually,
a quarter.
Yeah, I mean, that's significant.
No wonder they're freaking out.
Well, no wonder they're freaking out. So, and let's go through more. On page 22, who is spreading misinformation about COVID-19? 43% of the respondents think that it's individuals and alternative sources. 21% think it's official sources are spreading misinformation.
Well, that'd be right.
Then we've got page 24.
We can prove that. We can actually prove that, by the way.
Mm. Who is spreading misinformation about social, economic, health and justice issues? 42% think it's individuals or alternative sources. 26% think it's official sources.
Crikey. Well, that's quite a consistent chunk, isn't it? It's about the same ballpark across.
Let's carry on.
Okay.
Page 26, 23% think it's not true that government officials are open and honest. 23% think it's true that secret groups or organisations hold the real power and dictate what governments are doing and saying.
Wow.
So, you know, and then they're saying, of course, 48% of respondents said that, you know, they've seen some misinformation. So what they've done with this survey is they've gone through and they've selected a whole series of example questions, which they say are either true or not true. And it's things like Armstrong landed on the moon and, you know, and then, you know, things about...
It was the anniversary of that yesterday, by the way.
And, you know, so they've got this list of things. And so most people go through and identify a few of them as, you know, definitely not true. And then there's lots of questions about, you know, the vaccines and what have you. So, you know, the whole thing, I mean, it's suspect anyway, as a, you know, as a reliable survey. It's suspect anyway. And once again, there's this inherent bias in everything to do with this, is that the official narrative is true and everything else is misinformation or disinformation.
Yeah, it's so obvious. While I was thinking that figure, it's about a quarter of respondents. Let's say they would have done a survey or they would have done it, engineered it in a way that could have given them the best possible outcome, I would imagine. Could we assume that?
Oh, yes. And okay. I think you know, it's clear why they didn't release it earlier.
So even with that, they've got a quarter of their respondents, and that may have grown since then, that yes. that are no way believing in you know, this one source of truth. That's going to be growing. That's why they're desperate.
Yes, but I think that is the very thing that we should be very encouraged about.
Yeah, okay, fair enough to be positive about. But that's got to grow some more, though that is a fair chunk of the population.
Yes.
If that, and if they were going for the most favourable survey architecture possible, we could even maybe think that that figure is actually larger than that.
Well, I think, you know, what...
Maybe 30%.
Yeah. I mean, some people have talked about, you know, the wobbly middle. But given that, you know, and I've talked on this program before about, you know, psychological research that dates from decades ago, which basically has reliably produced the same result, that about 65% of the population will follow instructions if they think it comes from an authorised source. Right. So given that you've got that in there, I think, you know, to have that figure of plus 20% of the ordinary population either you know, or both, believe that, you know, somebody's engineering what the government is doing, and they don't believe government, and they don't have trust in government and official sources. So, you know, the message is getting out there, and it basically has to, because when you consider globally that thousands, hundreds of thousands of people in the medical and scientific community are working to try to uncover, you know, this conspiracy of silence about the damage that the mRNA vaccine is doing. And, you know, when there are hundreds of thousands of people in that camp across the world, this is my hope, that this information has got to make it out of the censorship mode that we're in.
And also, as that becomes more evident, and I think we can say it is, my own personal experience, it is, talking to Dr. Shelton, definitely their data says it is, that even the most hardened believer of the narrative is going to have to, at the point of their third or fourth friend or relative dying, because this is what's happening now, going to have to ask some hard questions. They're going to be forced into it. So I can see why there's a desperation in the air.
Oh, absolutely.
It's the tsunami potentially is on the way in.
Yes. And it's not just the, you know, the sort of human not wanting to back down. It's far more than that. What it is now is can't back down, because if you back down, it's actually going to show your role in it.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Okay. Have we worked our way through those two reports enough, do you think, for people to go away and think about it?
I think we've covered most of it, but I would encourage people to get the reports, read the reports, and just, you know, exercise your own common sense analysis.
Well, that's doing your own research.
Yes. And the closing
very
date
dangerous.
For oh yes, very, but the closing date for submissions on this proposal from Internal Affairs is the 31st of July.
Yeah.
So it's no accident that, you know, these other things, this undercurrent rubbish. And
why would you give such, this is the sort, if you're going to actually do this seriously, this is the sort of thing that would have a year out deadline, actually, because you'd never want to do any of this quickly, even if there was a good reason for it.
Well, yes, but I think they are trying to do it quickly at the moment.
That's right.
Because they're trying to get as much through, you know, while they've got the Labor Greens government in power, because they think, you know, that some of these things might well be sidelined. I think the threat is there for all of us, and we have to try to do something. Anything that people say in submissions is going to be overridden anyway, because we've seen that happen with the coroner's bill amendment. We've seen it happen with the Three Waters. We've seen the Therapeutic Products Act, and we've
just gone through its third reading. Yep.
Yeah, and we've seen all the fudged responses that we're getting to letters to the Prime Minister and Cabinet Ministers. Nevertheless, I think we have to keep on with that, because the more documentation that's assembled, the more, you know, it may be in a few years' time that, you know, this is gradually all exposed. I hope it won't be more than 10 years. But
the number last 10 years.
Yes. But, you know, we have to keep protesting.
Yeah. As always, fascinating hearing from you, Catherine Ennis-Carter. Thanks again. Thanks for doing the reading so we didn't have to. You poor thing. You're doing God's work. That's a good way of putting it. And let's see what happens. And maybe we'll talk again before they've finished with this undercurrent series, and we'll sort of get your view on how it's sort of come together, because I think it's a multiple episode thing. You know, I think they're talking about 7 at least episodes.
Well, yes.
I'm struggling to see how they're going to fill them up. But anyway, they obviously think they can.
Yes. Well, it'll be interesting to talk again after they've played all the 7 episodes.
We can do the greatest hits from them, maybe.
And yes.
Dissect them.
There were certainly a couple of doozies in the first 2 episodes.
So oh, yeah.
There'll be lots for you to play with.
I can just imagine the production session for that is, has anyone seen the horror music CD?
Yes. Yeah. Well, you know, there'll be.
I know the Paula Penfold still got it.
There'll be lots more to talk about.
Okay, Catherine, thanks again.
Thanks for having me on, Paul.
RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.